Hello and welcome back to another episode of Horribly Happy. I'm your host, Jenna.
And I'm your host, Sophie.
We're back at it for another week.
Another day, another dollar.
Welcome back to the pod, everyone. We're happy to have you. While you're here, rate, review, subscribe us, and share this with a friend. I'm just going to put that out there for all of those people that skip the end of our podcast. If you're a skipper, you owe us a review. That's 5 stars. And you also should share this with a friend that you think would like it.
Yeah, that just reminded me that last week at the end of the episode, we like ended it super quick because I had to go look at a house. And I fell in love with the house, put an offer in, and I didn't get it. So sad. But it's the first offer I put in on a house. So, I mean,
yeah,
it is what it is. But
yeah, we were on a strict time limit for our pod because Sophie had to go view a house. So we were like, oh, we have more than enough time. We were pretty long-winded last week, so we did not have enough time. And oh, it was the cutest little house ever. But you'll find something. Now you know, like, what gives you that feeling.
Yeah.
And you'll find something that, you know, you love equally as much, if not more.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a bummer, but it's okay. I'm not in a rush, so I just will keep continuing to look and keep my eyes peeled. I kind of feel like last episode I had 2 really, really interesting stories. I know they were long, but
yeah,
in my humble opinion, I thought they were 2 good stories.
We did get good feedback from last week. And I also, we talked about my bee sting last week. My mom texted me and she was like, first of all, ouch about your bee sting. Second of all, I got stung on the tongue this last weekend, a bee sting on the tongue, and she couldn't talk normal for 3 hours because she had a huge bump on her tongue. So not a good look for the ladies in our fam.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I feel like I've heard a couple people say bees seem very like unruly right now. But
well, okay, we'll skip ahead to Sophie and I were both in a wedding this weekend, which we'll elaborate more on. But during the ceremony, like, we're up in front of everybody because we're there supporting the lovely bride and groom, and a bee comes and lands on my arm, like a yellow jacket, exactly the type of bee that stung me earlier.
Wait, I didn't know that happened during the ceremony.
Yeah, because I've kind of forgot about it after the fact, but I like froze and I was like, I didn't know what to do because I was like really, really nervous. It was going to sting me again.
Oh my gosh. Cause I remember one flew at my face and I like actually like did that. And Sarah's mom in the front row pointed and laughed at me. Cause I like dodged it. What if it was the same one then went and landed on your arm?
Maybe. And it was there for a while. I mean, a few seconds, you know, feels like a while. And then
I
brushed it off. Cause I was just freaked out. I would have yelped if it stung me again in front of everybody.
The wedding was outside, like in a park. So there was lots of like flowers and stuff. So it makes sense that
it does.
And there were some critters.
It was so beautiful and fun. So it was our friend Sarah Layton, and she got married to her high school sweetheart, Logan.
Shout out Logan. Logan Layton. Mr. and Mrs. Layton.
as what is right. We talked about Sarah in a different episode in the beginning, just about how amazing of a friend she is and how much we love her. And it was so fun to celebrate her and their love. And I just felt so honored to be a part of their special day.
It was really, really great. It was so Sarah and Logan. It was like so beautiful, and there's just so many lovely people around, which I just feel like is such a reflection on Sarah and Logan and who they are as people and the type of friend they are and who they attract. The venue was amazing. I feel like, can we talk about where it was for any locals?
Yeah. So it was a regional park in Minneapolis. Well, it was right outside Minneapolis. It was in Golden Valley. So it's Theodore Worth Regional Park. which has like hiking and biking trails, and it has this super cute pavilion. It has, what would you call it?
It has more than that. It has hiking, biking, a golf course, sand volleyball courts, okay, and yes, there's access to water. it's huge. Like,
yeah,
because I had been there one other time, nowhere near where it was, but yeah, they had kind of like a pavilion / welcome center, I would say. Like, there was like brochures and like maps and then restrooms.
And there's normally a restaurant there.
Yeah.
And this restaurant catered the wedding. It's the best wedding food I've ever had in my life, I think.
It was really good. Very good.
But it was like so cute because the inside was like, it wasn't like a park center, you know, it like felt like a really cool out, like woodsy venue. Like it, yes, had like a big slanted ceiling with wood panels going across the whole ceiling. And then outside there was like string lights everywhere. And there was, it's big on cross country skiing there in the winter. So there was cross country skiing skis like lining, mm-hmm, the whole wall when you walk in. It was just like very cool.
Yeah. It was like modern up north woodsy vibe.
Yes.
Like modern meets up north. It seemed like it was built very recently. I don't know when, but it was very clean. It was very nice. It was a big space.
We did get ready at Sarah's house, which was really fun and relaxing and great.
Mm-hmm. I loved it.
But the place to get changed for Sarah was a locker room, which was also fine. We walked into the locker room and there was like 50 flies all around the locker room. That was the only bad thing about the whole venue. I don't know why there were so many flies in there. So we didn't want Sarah to see it. So when she left, Sophie and I grabbed a big newspaper and just started absolutely swatting flies in our dresses. Like, we were all done up. Sophie was literally standing on a toilet swatting these flies.
For like a good 10 minutes, we were just going ham on the flies. And we killed most of them, but there was still a couple. But we were like, we can't have these.
This'll do.
Yeah, little buggers everywhere. But yeah, great venue for any locals.
I literally cannot wait to see the photos because Sarah had all of the bridesmaids wear like, mm-hmm, the really pretty like earthy tone color dresses, like,
mm-hmm,
green, sagey greens, you know, like mauve earthy, and then
navy
blue. Oh yeah, your dress was so cute.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like very like whimsical. And then Sarah herself just had like the most beautiful dress. And like her hair was like long, curly down with like a cute,
yeah,
little. She also looked very whimsical. And
yeah,
it was overcast most of the day. And we were in the woods and it just felt like a fairy tale. Like very, I don't know.
Whimsical is such a good way to describe it.
Yeah. I can't wait to see the pictures because it just, mm-hmm, I feel like it's going to be such a mood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her photographer was great. It did downpour for like 10 minutes as like we got everyone out there to take a big group picture, so we had to run back in, regroup, and then
and this was an hour before the ceremony, so I'm sure Sarah's like, the ceremony was outdoors.
Yeah,
I'm sure Sarah was like, oh my god.
Yeah,
but it cleared up, the ceremony was outside, it missed it a little during the ceremony, which I thought was fun, and it was beautiful.
Yeah. It was like moody, whimsical vibes.
Yes.
It was a good time.
And I mean, they're just the best. So we love them so much.
Mm-hmm.
To end the night, somebody ordered pizza, which was like so.
It was Broderick.
Broderick. Yeah. Justy.
Thank you, Broderick. Broderick
ordered pizza.
Justy, if Broderick's not listening, but you are, tell him he is the MVP of the night.
I really think that saved my life, and I'm not joking. So I had pizza and I was just minding my business, and then all of a sudden I realized I couldn't find Zach, who was my date, obviously. And
like, I'm we're like, eating pizza, but like also like getting ready, like making game plans, like if people are going out, if people are going home. So you're kind of like, oh wait,
yeah, like where's my buddy? There was a shuttle going back to the hotels that everybody out of town was staying in. Zach and I live 10 minutes away, so we were not gonna take the shuttle. So I was like, okay, let me just like go around, look for Zach. I'm like going and looking for him, can't find him. And then I'm like, maybe he thinks we're going on the shuttle. I open the shuttle door, I look, go in, and it's like everybody's just staring at me. I felt like there was a spotlight on me, and I was like, Zach. And then everybody looked up at me, but I didn't see his bright shining face. So I just went to the back of the bus, and I found him not feeling too well in the back of the bus. So I,
but you found him.
I did find him, and I brought him off the bus. I promptly ordered us an Uber home. I was like, okay, so we're not going out. The Uber driver home was so strange.
First off, you guys were waiting a long time for an Uber.
So long. So the Uber driver came, and Zach was like not feeling well, but he was like fine. Like he was just like, when he
just like too much, just wants to get home.
He just gets a little sleepy. So he was just a little bit sleepy in the back of the cab. And the driver, first off, I rolled down the windows because I'm like, just in case.
And fresh air is always nice when you've been drinking.
And we're not on the highway, like we're taking back roads. So, anyways, first things I see, he's driving super normal. And then all of a sudden he looks back and sees Zach like asleep essentially. And he goes, he better not puke in my backseat. I said, nope, he'll be fine. And after he saw that Zach was not feeling well, he literally started driving like a maniac. Like he was going over bumps so fast, like twisting and turning the car. I actually saw him on his phone. The route was 11 minutes. I saw him change the route to a longer route that added on 8 more minutes. So it was 19 minutes.
And like we were not far from your house. This venue was less than 10 minutes from your house.
He literally like opted into a different route that was like much more windy and longer. And then he was absolutely flying through the streets. Like, I don't know. My dramatic self was like, I feel like he is trying to make Zach sick right now. So he
gets
You have to pay like $200 if somebody gets sick in your car, right?
Yeah, but like, is that cost really worth having to clean that up?
Like, I know, but it just felt weird because like he was driving normal and then he added on whatever. And then he goes, it's really cold in here. Can you roll up the window? I'm like, no.
I forgot about that part.
No, sorry. I'm going to keep him open.
He was sabotaging.
I know. I really felt like he was trying to make Zach sick.
Anyway. Well, it didn't work, so.
We made it home. We're all good, and Zach is great as can be, so we're in the clear.
So I was catching an Uber with a couple of Sarah's sisters and one of their husbands, and we had like a weird Uber experience too. So there's four of us, so we ordered an Uber X, which is like four people, and
Uber X. Oh yeah, so that's a normal Uber. Yeah.
Yep. If you pull up the app, it says four passengers.
It says four passengers.
Yeah. So he pulls up, and Kristen tries to get into the front seat, and he's like, no one can sit in the front seat. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, you ordered an Uber X. If you want to fit four people in this Uber, you should have ordered an Uber XL. I was
it's literally not how it works.
And like, granted, I'm a little intoxicated at this point. So I'm like, I'm like, okay, well, can we just like squeeze in the back seat? Like the four of us, like we can squeeze if you don't want us in the front seat. I mean, at this point, Becca's husband, Chris, is like, why can't we sit in the front seat? And he's like, oh, it's COVID rules, which is like just not true. Like maybe personally he has that rule, but he made it sound like it's,
I don't know. Like I would want to look at Uber's like policies now, because for a while nobody could sit in the front seat with COVID,
right?
But right. I wonder what it is now. Like maybe it's like optional for the driver, but then they should clearly have that,
then they should be able to put that on their like listing of like
you should be able to put your number of passengers,
yeah,
like they wouldn't accept your ride because like it literally says four passengers when you're selecting an Uber X.
Yeah, no, exactly. But of course, like we're intoxicated. We get a little mouthy to the guy, and just like Chris was just kind of like, that's not a good excuse. Like, that's not a good reason. Like, you're packing us all in a car. Like, how does that make any sense?
Right.
Like, they don't even require masks anymore. So it's like, it just really doesn't make sense. If they asked me to wear a mask, of course I would, but that's beside the point. And then the guy just goes,
masker.
And then the driver just goes, get out of the car. I'm not completing this trip. So he literally like boots us out of the car. And then Chris feels bad because like, I've totally been there. Like I've sassed off many times completely sober. But then I think he felt bad because like I had called it and how it affected my score, whatever, it doesn't matter. But we ended up getting a new one, but we did have to wait like another 15 minutes. And I don't know, we just had both weird Uber
I feel experiences. Like it must be like a car-to-car policy, a driver policy, if they want to have a passenger in the front seat or not. But yeah, the driver should make that accommodation and allow you to select the number of passengers when you request the ride.
Yeah, if that's like a personal policy, that is totally fine. Yeah, but
because I like actually had that in Santa Barbara when I was there. I ordered an Uber for four, an Uber X, and the driver was like, oh, sorry, like we can only take three because of COVID. Again, this was like 2 months ago.
Yeah. But
of course, we're like, oh, no problem. Like, well, can we squeeze four in the back? Exactly what you asked. Mm-hmm. I'm like, or we'll order one more. And he was like, no, I'll squeeze you in. So then he squeezed us in anyways. But it was like his personal policy to only have three. But I'm like, okay, well, then add that to your app.
There should be an update to the app that says that, because that's
I'll submit a request for them.
Well, I filed like a thing.
Product manager to add that.
I like filed a thing for him saying like he had... I think it was like false. I don't even remember. It was like a prompt, and Lyft just like automatically gave me $5. And they're just like, sorry about your experience. And I was like, no, I really wanted to actually type in what happened, because like you and me are talking about now, like, is this a real policy? Is this something I should like look out for? Not that I take cabs that much, but it just seemed kind of weird.
Yeah. It's annoying. But I do feel for those drivers, because they probably get shitty people all the time, but like genuinely you guys did nothing wrong. It's just like a frustrating situation. Something the company should fix. It's not on you. It's kind of on the driver, in my opinion, but
it's really a company problem then.
Yes, exactly.
So get on it.
We'll submit some complaints.
Yeah. Anyway, so not anything super juicy or exciting, but it was a fun weekend.
Things to look forward to. I don't have a wedding for a month.
Same.
I'm so excited for that next wedding. Hannah and Jordan are people. This would be so nice to just like chill for a month. Oh,
yes. Jenna runs, and this is a reminder, Jenna runs the 10 mile next Sunday. So we'll have a great update for that. I'm so excited.
I'm looking kind of nervous.
Well, of course you are.
Yeah, but like I don't care how I do. You know, it's like I'm not like racing. Like I'm just running it.
Right.
Walking. Like I will be walking part of it. But what I was doing when I was training was I was running, like I run 3 miles through, like straight, and then I would take like a few steps and get some water and then start running again for another mile. And then each mile, I would just like walk a little bit longer in the middle of the mile. So I'd like run for most of the mile, walk a little bit, and then run the last part of the mile. So just however like my body felt. So it was a little treat each mile. I got to just like walk a tiny bit.
I think, yeah, you have no expectations. You have no time you're trying to beat. You can walk if you want. I think the endurance or the, what am I trying to say?
The adrenaline.
The adrenaline will give you a boost of energy and you might not walk as much. But also if you end up walking more than you thought, that's okay too. It's like, who cares?
Yes.
You'll finish and you'll feel good.
And I actually saw a TikTok today that like I resonated with so much. So I was a college athlete, D3, but I like worked very hard. Like, you push your body and like you're working towards a goal. Mm-hmm. So you don't really care about like being in shape for how your body looks. You more care about like being in shape so you perform well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a recent college graduate. She was talking about her getting into running. She was training for a half marathon, and she was like, it has been so good for my mental health, because like when I graduated college and I stopped like competing, I was so worried about working out to like keep up my physique, you know, like how I looked. And I started training for this half marathon, and now it's all about just like training to feel good while I'm running and training for this event. And I'm not even trying to get a good time. She's like, I'm literally running like 10, 11 minute miles, and it's literally just to like train for this event. And it's like totally reshaped how I feel about like working out and my body. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's exactly how I feel right now. Like, I'm not that fixated on anything. Like, I'm only like working on like how I feel when I'm running,
which and is feeling better the next run.
Yeah, exactly.
Or going a little bit farther than the run before, whatever that looks like to you, but just like feeling good while still being able to push yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you're working towards an event and not like a body shape.
Right.
Which I really like.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's my update. We'll give you a run update after this weekend with how I did.
I can't wait. I'll be cheering you on.
Hopefully it's nice. I haven't even looked at the weather.
It looks nice, so.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait. Is it hilly? You've ran this before, right?
Yeah, it's like kind of a slight uphill when you're running up Summit. For most of the way, it's like kind of just uphill. Probably the last like 4 miles, so like half of the race. But it ends on, I guess it ends on a downhill. I feel like the last like half mile is downhill.
Okay. I don't really care about like gradual uphill.
It's not like crazy uphill.
Yeah.
Just enough so you feel it a little bit.
Cool. Well. Yeah. I got a carbo load on Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, girly.
All right, cool. Well, shall we get into the stories?
Let's do it.
Do we have anything else to talk about?
No, okay, I don't.
Cool. Okay, so I am horrible this week, and I kind of wanted to get into like something a little bit spooky, because it's fall. September 22nd marked the beginning of fall.
Is this going to be about ghosts?
Yes, but it doesn't like focus on that.
Okay.
But this is something I heard about when I was young, and I'm just like, I've always been so intrigued by it, but I never did research on it, and it was fascinating. So I'm doing the Winchester Mystery House and the troubled heiress who built it.
Okay. I don't know if I know this. The what house? Say it again.
The Winchester Mystery House.
Okay.
I don't know why I know this, but like I feel like I used to like Google it all the time when I was younger, but I didn't really like Google the backstory behind it. I just kind of Googled like details about the house. So over the course of 40 years, Sarah Winchester had the so-called Winchester Mystery Mansion built in San Jose, California, to build her bizarre specifications in order to appease the ghosts that she thought were haunting her. Okay. So my source this week is allthatisinteresting.com. Allthatsinteresting.com. Not all that is.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Allthatsinteresting.com.
Yeah, got it.
Okay, and I remember hearing about this, I think because in Duluth, what house is that? That's like on
the Glensheen Mansion. Glensheen. That's actually a good horrible story.
Yeah. So like I was like fascinated by that house, and then I stumbled on this house, the Winchester Mansion, and it's like so weird. Like it's huge, and there's like doors that lead to nothing and like staircases that lead to nothing. Hmm. And like everything's built in 13s. Like every staircase has 13 steps. There's 13 bathrooms in the house. Ew. Yeah, it's like very weird. So That's like all I ever looked up about the house when I was younger, but I was like, okay, what's the actual story on that house? So the Winchester Mystery House is famous amongst history and mystery aficionados alike because it has those winding staircases, doors that lead to nowhere, and reported hauntings. So the house remains a popular destination, but its fascinating owner, Sarah Winchester, is often an afterthought. So prior to building this house, Sarah was an ordinary but very wealthy woman. She wasn't like cuckoo or like, you know, haunted by ghosts or anything.
Yeah.
She was born in New Haven, Connecticut to upper class parents around 1840. So this is a long time ago. And she enjoyed the spoils of a luxurious life. The family ensured that their seven children were well-rounded, and Sarah learned four languages as a child and was even admitted to the Young Ladies Collegiate Institute at Yale College in the 1800s. Kind of crazy.
Wow.
Sarah, as she grew up, by the time she was the age to marry, her parents already had someone in mind, and this was a man that would ensure their daughter would be taken care of for her entire life. His name was William Wirt Winchester. He was the only son of a firearms manufacturer called Oliver Winchester. And William was the heir to the Winchester Repeating Arms Company. So, guns. And they made a fortune, this Winchester family.
Got it.
They, like, huge fortune for that time and even okay. Now it would one day become the foundation of Sarah Winchester's strange obsession, this fortune. So William and Sarah Winchester married in September of 1862. During their marriage, William worked as a treasurer for his family's company alongside his father. 4 years into their marriage, Sarah had a daughter named Annie Winchester. Unfortunately, their joy would be short-lived. Just 40 days after Annie's birth, she died of marasmus, which is a rare disease in the body when it suffers from malnutrition due to an inability to metabolize proteins. Oh, which I wonder would be like fixable now.
Yeah.
I don't know. So many people thought Sarah never quite recovered from the death of her daughter. And her and William did remain married, but Sarah became increasingly distressed, often over the source of the company's and thus her own wealth. So she was really, really distressed that they were making a fortune off of guns.
Okay.
Which is like progressive queen. In her eyes, the Winchester family profit. Or the Winchester family business profited from death, and this was something she could not cope with. The Winchester family also created like a gun that was able to load rounds much quicker than the average gun. So you could get a okay. lot of rounds off much, much quicker. So
yeah.
it was like the first of their kind and became super popular and essentially like started circulating those guns that could fire off rounds really quickly.
Yeah.
To complicate matters, William's father, Oliver, died in 1880, leaving the company in the hands of his own son, William. But just a year later, William himself fell ill and died from tuberculosis, leaving Sarah with everything because William was the only son.
Okay.
So suddenly, Sarah Winchester was in possession of a $20 million fortune, which is equivalent to about $500 million today. And she also received 50% stake in the Winchester Arms Company. She never took up a position in the business, though, because she was vehemently opposed to the business.
Fair.
Her stake left her with a continuous income of $1,000 a day, which is about $26,000 now a day.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, like this is like extreme wealth.
Yeah.
In Sarah's opinion, her newfound fortune was blood money, and she saw what this blood money she thought was earned from the deaths of thousands of people. So in her search of what to do with the money, Winchester sought to, the help of a medium in Boston, a few hours north of her New Haven home. Winchester shared her guilt over the numerous victims of the guns with the medium, and according to him, Sarah would become tormented unless she appeased the spirits of these victims. So the medium told her to appease these spirits.
Got it.
He told her that the only way to do this was to move west and to build a home for the lost souls. Not one to risk eternal damnation at the hands of angry spirits, Sarah listened to the medium's advice and made her way out west. So she moved from New England and she went to the sunny Bayside city of San Jose, California.
Okay.
In 1884, Sarah Winchester purchased an unfinished farmhouse in the Santa Clara Valley. Instead of hiring an architect to start renovating this home, she just enlisted the services of a team of carpenters, and she told them exactly what to do. And she didn't have like a floor plan or anything. Like, she just like would show up every day and just be like, tell them what to do.
Do this now and whatever. She was just kind of rolling with it.
Exactly. She hired carpenters to work around the clock, expanding the small house into a 7-story mansion. And due to a lack of plan, the presence of an architect, the house was constructed haphazardly. Rooms were added onto the exterior of walls, resulting in windows looking into other rooms. Multiple staircases would be added, all with different sized risers, giving each staircase a distorted look. Many alterations were seemingly pointless. The staircases would often ascend several levels and then end abruptly, leading to nothing. Doors would open to solid wood walls, and hallways would turn a corner and then end abruptly in a dead end. Winchester insisted the home would be built exclusively out of redwood, but she did not like the look of redwood, so she covered it with stain and faux grain. By the time the house was completed, over 20,000 gallons of paints had been used to cover the wood.
Oh my gosh. I'm looking up photos right now. It is literally wood everywhere.
Yeah. So by the turn of the century, Sarah Winchester had her ghost house, an oddly laid out mansion with 7 stories, 161 rooms, 47 fireplaces, 10,000 panes of glass, 2 basements, 3 elevators, and a mysterious funhouse-like interior. Gold and silver chandeliers hung from the ceilings above hand-laid parquet floorings. Dozens of artful stained glass windows created by Tiffany & Co., the founder of Tiffany & Co., dotted the walls, including some by the Louis Comfort Tiffany himself. One window in particular was intended to create a prismatic rainbow effect on the floor when light flowed through it. Of course, the window ended up on an interior wall, so the effect was never achieved.
Okay.
So even more luxurious than the fixtures was actually the plumbing and electrical work of the house. And it was very rare for this time because the house was being built in the late 1800s. So it had indoor plumbing, including hot running water and push button gas lighting available throughout the whole home, and forced air heating flowed throughout the house. So that was actually extremely rare for that time. Like, Nobody had that. So from the time she moved to San Jose in the late 1800s, Sarah made quite the name for herself thanks to her obsession with the afterlife. She had put up with the rumors of insanity and supernatural possession for the duration of her whole life, because she kind of, you know, as she's building this, she just kind of became the talk of the town.
Yeah. Naturally.
The contractors who worked on the house reported Winchester having daily seances with local mediums in an effort to reach the good spirits. These good spirits reportedly consulted to find out how to best appease the spirits whom she allegedly built the house for. So the spirits that were killed by guns.
Mm-hmm.
These spirits are reportedly what called Winchester to make such illogical additions to the new home.
Mm.
Out of the 13 bathrooms in the entire home, only one was functional. It was an effort to confuse any ghosts wishing to haunt a spigot.
What? That house, that's okay. Besides like the idea of the ghost, that huge of a house, only one bathroom works.
One working bathroom, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
He would also sleep in a different room every night in the Winchester house and would use secret passageways to get from one room to another so no spirits could follow her.
Girl, they can see what you're doing all the time. Probably.
In September of 1922, Sarah passed away peacefully in her sleep, and the house went into the hands of her secretary and niece, same person, who then sold it at an auction. The house was worth nothing because it was so illogical.
Mm-hmm.
So a local investor purchased the home for $135,000 in 1922, just 5 months after she died. And they then, 5 months after she died, opened the Winchester Mystery House for public tours.
Okay.
So today it remains a bustling tour attraction in San Jose, drawing everyone's attention with its strange hallways, doors, windows, and over 160 rooms.
That's crazy. I've never heard this story before.
It's crazy, and it's like, I'm like giggling at it, but it's like very sad for her. Like, what a tormented life.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, you know? Is like, there had to have been something.
She was so tormented by the fortune that she inherited.
Yeah, and like where that came from and the business that she married into. Yeah.
And like the business kept running, so she just kept acquiring wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's like crazy, and I would die to see the house. Like, yeah. I would love it. I don't think the house is haunted. I think she was haunted by that fortune.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
For sure. And something about out east, man, there's a lot of like ghost spiritual stuff out there. I mean, Salem is out there, but like I wonder if just kind of that upbringing too and that exposure to it maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I kind of emphasize, like, she had a very normal life.
Mm-hmm. You
know, like, she was super smart, super well off, had a very mm-hmm. luxurious life, but was, like, mm-hmm. not into seances or mediums or anything like that. Like, mm-hmm. you just, like, became so distressed by this fortune that she received.
Yeah, obviously there was some mental anguish and distress going on to, like, lead yourself to believe that you need to live a life like that and build a house like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's super interesting.
I know. I'm happy I looked into it because like I always knew about the house and like 13 and blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize like where it came from, and it's just actually like a really sad story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. They do tours now. It would be really cool to go. It's obviously
crazy that they immediately. Sorry, I just interrupted you, but. They're talking shit about this woman her whole life.
Yeah.
She dies five months later. It's an immediate tourist attraction.
Capitalism, baby.
I know. Literally.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know when I'll get out there, but if I'm ever in the area.
Keep your eyes peeled.
I'll have to check it out. Good story. I can't believe I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, I was like, I wanted to do something spooky, but like, I actually get scared reading some of these spooky stories. So I'm like, this one feels safe.
Yeah.
So but
there is some essence of spooky.
For sure. We have pictures posted on Instagram.
Yeah.
So you can check those out.
I know. I feel like every other week I'm like looking up the pictures as you're telling a story because I just like have to visualize, and it's like so fascinating. I just like can't wait. I need to like look.
I know,
right? Then
I should like I should do like a slideshow.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, I mean, like from the outside it's crazy,
but it's huge.
Oh my gosh, it's so huge, but like, you know, it looks like something magical almost from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
The inside mm-hmm. is just weird. But I think people actually have like weddings there. Like it's like a
venue of
some sort. But it's like an attraction for like people to go walk through, but it's also like a wedding venue.
Yeah.
It's beautiful from the outside. The inside freaks me out, but
yeah, I don't like all the wood and
it feels though inside me. No, the inside makes me feel like Plum in the library with a candlestick.
Oh yeah.
Clue.
Yeah. Yeah. Colonel Mustard.
Yes. Violet.
Okay. Cool. Well, thanks for sharing.
You got it, babes.
Bibs. Okay, my story is not very interesting, but it's cute.
Don't lead with that.
I just feel like you had such an interesting topic last week. Mine's very simple.
I don't even remember what I did last week, so it's no sweat.
Patagonia, but yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So my story this week is just talking about the transformation of scruffy urban spaces in Europe. And my only source is positive.news.com.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, which is actually just a cute little website in general. So ask for forgiveness rather than permission is Brid Ruddy's advice for starting a project like Belfast Wildflower Alley. Back in 2015, Ruddy, along with some neighbors and student volunteers from nearby Queen's University, transformed the back alley behind her street into a garden. The transformation was an upgrade from what used to be an area filled with vandalism and trash dumping, like illegal trash dumping.
Yeah.
This sparked a movement of other groups across the UK to take unloved land and fill them with fruit, vegetables, and flowers. I know, it's so sweet. Roughly 1 in 5 people in the UK live in areas that lack access to green space, and a study done at Lancaster University found that Britain could significantly boost its fruit and vegetable production by cultivating scraps of unused land. So essentially just taking advantage of unused plots of land.
Yeah.
Although transforming an alleyway into a garden seems like a somewhat simple task, Ruddy had to bring the alley's official owners, the Department for Infrastructure, on board, which took nearly 2 years. 4 years, sorry.
Oh, God.
So once she got the go ahead, Ruddy was surprised by the amount of space she would need to fill and was, I think, kind of like overwhelmed at first about how to do it all. So her and the other alley residents just started small. They first painted their back doors and fences bright colors and grabbed old decor from their houses that they no longer wanted or needed. They then planted wildflower seeds donated by Grow Wild and compost donated by Queen's University. Community groups have grown inspired and have taken matters into their own hands by calling for a right now or right to grow law. So quote, right to grow law. And in May of 2022, members of Incredible Edible, a network of more than 150 UK community gardens, drew up plans to request local authorities to keep a register of public land suitable for vegetables and fruit growing, which local groups can apply to access and handle.
Mm.
So I think kind of a lot like what a community garden is.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Around here. Wildflower Alley regularly welcomes visitors such as school children who will pick strawberries and gooseberries, as well as student volunteers who help with the maintenance. Other gardens have sprung up in Belfast alleys from being inspired by Ruddy's work. So it was kind of interesting to read that because I feel like in my back alley right now, granted I'm a renter, but you might be a better example as a homeowner. If you have like green space that kind of runs up to your alley, I think you can technically like plant whatever you want on it.
Right.
And, in my back alley, actually, there are some alley gardens, and there must have been some like summer competition because the person across from me in the alley has a little sign that says like Alley Garden of the Summer. So I think like they won like a little contest or whatever it is. But I think the idea was also like, I think there is some kind of truth to when like a place looks disheveled or worn down, crime is higher, vandalism is higher, pollution is higher, and to transform it into something that is, you know, beautiful, clean, offers a sense of community, it creates more safety and likableness in an area. So I think that is kind of also one of the driving factors behind making these gardens throughout the UK.
I love it. And like, that's just like a local, like that's just what I'm like, locally sourced food is huge. Even if it's just like a few strawberries from like your backyard, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You have access to that and it's a privilege. So that's amazing. Yeah, I love that so much. I didn't know that your alley had that. I want to look at it now.
I know.
Take a picture if it's still blooming.
I will. I know. Yeah. I was like taking out garbage and recycling, and I was like, that's really cute. Congrats.
Congrats.
Good job.
It did make me think of like local community gardens too. On my running route, there's two community gardens that I run past, and I love it so much. Like, yeah, if you don't have the space to grow your own food, it's awesome that like there's green space that you can use to, you know, start doing that yourself. I love that.
And there's so many, like, I'm thinking mostly vegetables that grow so easily and in like such a plethora.
Yeah.
Like squash, oftentimes it's like zucchini. People are just like dying to get rid of it.
And
grow that in their yards.
The one community garden that I run by, there's a box that you can donate the food to SNAP, which is food stamps, like, so you can and SNAP comes and picks it up every week, so you can, if your plethora of food or whatever, you can add it to the SNAP box, which is
that's so great.
Yeah
So short, sweet, but the photos of it are really cute. It's like pretty dreamy looking, and the alley's like much smaller than like an alley you'd see here. I don't think like a car could fit down it, but it was really cute, the pictures.
Freaking love that. I'm just thinking, like my alley is mostly cement.
Mm-hmm.
So was there's like dirt?
No, like the alley, there is some paved, like small section in the alley, but then it's mostly just like people's fences and like maybe sheds more so than garages, because it doesn't seem big enough for a car to go through. There's just like little tiny plants and flowers and whatever, like anything that they could fit in any little spot they filled. Yeah.
Okay, now I want to go look at my alley and see what I could do.
Yeah, you should. So cute.
And then I'm going to make my own sign and say Garden Alley of the Summer.
It would be kind of cute. At the very least, there's a house just one street over from me. They are like converting their front yard to just like all wildflowers.
Mm-hmm.
It would be so pretty to have just like a big patch of wildflowers, and then you can pick them and put them in your house in the summer.
So I think I want to do that in either one of my
boxes,
in one of my boxes, or in that one like rocky area, but that's like low sun, so I think it will work better for one of my boxes.
Yeah
That's the goal. Love. Well, thanks for sharing.
Yes, of course.
We love local food. Heart.
We love community. Sharing is caring.
Exactly. Well, we're going to promptly go get some rest. We're still recuperating a bit from this weekend. So in the meantime, we love you. Have a great rest of your week and stay happy.
As happy as you can be.
Bye. Thank you.